I'd like to now introduce our guest speaker for the month of October, speaking on steps 3, 4, and 5, Peter from Brooklyn.
Hi, everybody. I'm Peter. I'm an alcoholic. And grateful to be alive and sober at a meeting. And there must be something in my name. She laughs every time she says my name. And I'm going to get to, there's a connection with that. I don't know. I was getting dressed tonight, and I'm saying, well, maybe I should wear a shirt and tie, and the weather was kind of lousy, so I wore what I wore. And when I walked in, three guys gave me the best Don Corleone impression. Is the... One guy asked me if I'm in the cast of The Sopranos, except for Chris Raymond, who said, don't you look lovely tonight? So I'm taking my cigars back after the meeting. I'll go home, change, and we'll start all over again. I'm grateful to be alive and sober and at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And once again, thank you, Michael, for asking me down here tonight to share with this group. And really, I'm grateful for what you guys are doing here week after week after week. My big book tells me to create the fellowship you crave. And after many, many battles, you know how business meetings are, trying to get hammer out a policy. If you say you love everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, you haven't been to enough business meetings yet. But there's a few group members, Barbara and Lisa from Free Spirit, here tonight, and we've been trying to get something going at my group. And a friend of mine, Howard G., says you're one man with a book under his arm, and go follow your quiet voice. And so what we started at my home group, and this is not a plug for my home group, just to share some gratitude, we started an open speaker meeting where speakers come in and do the meeting, their story and what it was like after giving themselves to this simple program. And Howard was there last week, and we had a really great turnout, and we had another gentleman, Walt, last night, and it was standing room only. And it's a message that's putting out there, and my hope is that someone who's looking for a solution will find it at Free Spirit. And I'm just so grateful to be a part of my home group again. I'm excited about my home group again. I suffer from back pain, and someone was saying they read an article where lower back pain has to do with this inner rage. And I says, yeah, I've been a member of my group for 14 years. What do you expect? But I'm excited about being part of my home group again, and it's really good, thank the good Lord. Create the fellowship you crave. Once again, my big book didn't lie to me. Since I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know why, but I've been moved to seek the fellowship I crave. I've chased this message all over, from here in Jersey to Queens to Harlem, wherever I may go, upstate, I was taken. I would go on my own. I'd take cars, trains, whatever I had to do to find this message, to be in the solution, and visit our sordid spots in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I've been seeking the fellowship I crave, and I'm so very grateful that something has happened within my home group. I don't know why, but that's what I was moved to do. And what I have found out is I need to have an experience, new experiences all the time. The experience I had when I got here may not be sufficient now to keep me in a recovered place, but I need to continue to seek new experiences. What I've also found out is, you know, my belief in God and having an experience with God is sometimes two different neighborhoods. You know, I was told early on the longest distance in the world is from my head to my heart. It's kind of like, well, I believe in God, but am I going to have an experience with Him? And I've been able to do that. I've been able to do that and continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I have seen very recently the importance of staying current in this work, seeking new experiences, and continue to grow. This has been really gotten me excited all over again about what I'm trying to do and what God has allowed me to do a day at a time. I got here in 1988. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. And I stand here tonight as a recovered member of Alcoholics Anonymous because I no longer suffer from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I've been set free because of the information I've had an experience with in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, from some very wonderful teachers that were put in my life, put in my path. I shared last week that anytime I picked friends, they usually were as bad as me or worse. You know, and the ones who I thought were worse than me, I felt better than, until I hit their level. You know, I says, I'm in trouble again, and I go look for new friends to hang out with, and it was just repeated over and over again. I walked in here June 23rd, 1988, broken and leveled at the hands of alcoholism, and here I was begging for a drink before I got here, and I show up, and I'm begging for a solution, and how that happened, I don't know. I have to say it was God. And then I kept seeking this information. I was living in Minnesota for a while, and I would go to a lot of meetings, and people there told me that I was suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience would conquer. And I tried many other ways to recover. Never worked until I was presented with the message in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And like a very willing student, because alcohol beat me to a place of reasonableness, a very willing student, I followed directions. And, you know, what I found out now, I mean, the very, very important. I don't want to minimize them. What I've found out is I'm not to worship this methodology. It's about what kind of experience am I having with the information in this book. I've been to many meetings where I've seen people recite this book forwards and backwards. I mean, get into the steps to a point where, I mean, I was at a conference one time and I looked at a friend and I says, I didn't know I needed a calculus degree to recover. Where's the spirit of this? I've been to many places where I've heard people say, just put the plug in the jug, and I'm saying, but I always take it out of the jug. This ain't working. I'm very grateful for a message that was presented to me where people told me I need to have an experience with this book, because when I experience this book, I will experience my God of my understanding. This was great news to me, who suffered from alcoholism. When I got here in June 1988, I listened to some of the information, and this may work for some. I'm not here to tell anyone you're doing it right or wrong. That's not my thing. But I was following some of the direction, and that was don't drink and go to meetings, and I was completely out of my mind. I was running around in Alcoholics Anonymous, untreated, suffering from this illness and behaving in ways that, you know, I think about it now, I cringe. And going to meetings and raise my hand, I'm saying I'm sober this long. And I had a good day because I didn't pick up a drink and I just tommed 30 people before I got there. That's not the way to live. That will catch up to me and get me drunk, because alcohol is a subtle foe. It'll lay in wait. It'll lay in wait. And that's exactly what it was doing, because December 22nd, 1988, what happened to me was the Christmas holidays were about to happen, and I'm living in Minnesota, and a girl I was having this kind of a relationship with told me she didn't want to have this relationship with me anymore. I was running around untreated. The pain of living in here without my old solution was horrific, and what I wanted to do more than anything else in the world was to pick up a drink again, because I knew that was going to take me to a place of ease and comfort, I hoped. And little by slowly, I was blocking out that incomprehensible demoralization that was waiting. Being in here and separated from alcohol doesn't mean I'm immune to alcohol, especially without an experience. And I showed up at this man's house, and I shared with him my dramas of life. And he asked me where I was with God in the 12 steps. And I asked him, when do you start the steps? And he says, when you stop throwing up, you're late. And he disturbed me on this question of alcoholism. But I believe I shared this last week, how as much as he disturbed me, and some of these wonderful people in Minnesota disturbed me, I knew they were giving me a truth, because they were very sure about what they were doing, and all I had to see with my own eyes how they were living their life. You know, they would take me to the diner after the meeting and shoot the breeze at the diner. They didn't shoot the breeze in here. They talked about their boss and their problems at home there. They talked about a solution here. They talked about a problem and a solution here. And I saw how these people lived outside of this hour that we meet. And that convinced me more than anything that these people were on a different footing. Their roots grasp new soil. And that convinced me, and I want what they have to offer. I will do anything to get it, and I was a willing student. And I don't give this lip service. My alcoholism took me to being locked up too many times and being homeless too long, living in the street, sleeping in hallways, doing horrific things. Now, that's my story, and it's the worst story in the whole world because I lived it. But you don't have to go to that level. Your story, wherever it may be, Park Avenue, park benches, the worst story in the whole world, because it's your story. But that's where my illness took me to. And I stand here tonight very grateful that it took me to that place. I'll probably never survive it if, God forbid, I was to go back out again. God forbid. I'd probably never survive it. But here tonight, I'm grateful because it put me in a place of 14 years later. I'm still willing tonight, as I speak, willing to go to any lengths to continue to stay recovered and seek new experiences. What I have found out in here is this. We recover. We have a sponsor. Hopefully that sponsor has a sponsor. We start to work with people. We go to meetings. We're asked to speak. The wife lets us back in the bedroom. You know, we get jobs. I notice when women come around, they get manicures and hairdos, and guys get new sneakers. That seems to be the thing. You know, right away what's going on. But that stuff, you know, and things start to get, like, nice. Things start to get comfortable, manageable. And what I have found out here is, things start to get manageable, I need to be careful that I'm not a prey to comfortability, if that makes any sense. Because our book warns us about resting on our laurels, we're headed for trouble if we do. So everything starts to get manageable, and the illness tells me, well, you can relax a little bit now. You don't have to continue to seek. You can kind of kick back and say, when I went through the steps, you know, or tell the prospects, make sure you go home, write inventory tonight while you're watching, like, episodes of Seinfeld or something, and you're not writing. And we become a prey to comfortability. I experienced some of that. What's waiting for me is that restless, ill, and discontented, driven by fear kind of feeling, page 52. And I'm experiencing page 52. I'm walking right into it suddenly. And then I get drunk and say, okay, how did this happen? How did this happen? So I'm really grateful that I'm in this place of willing to seek this information. My first step tells me about the allergy, the phenomenon of craving, that whenever I drank alcohol, the alcohol, the craving was always intensified, never satisfied. And part of my unmanageability was not even knowing when I was going to pick up. There was a story in a book, Not a Cloud on the Horizon. I've had many days where there didn't appear to be a cloud on the horizon, and I got drunk. And there were many days where my life, I knew, was in a toilet, and I had to drink. And then I reached a place where, no matter what was going on, my body screamed for alcohol, because I would become violently ill if I didn't. I got the mental obsession and the spiritual malady they talk about. Our book talks about conceding to my innermost self, and I had done that on the street. When I was living in hallways and going into rehab after rehab, I conceded. And that's a spiritual thing, I think, when it happens, when we hit that place deep down in here where no one has to point fingers at us and tell us, hey, you have a problem. We know it. That's a spiritual thing. That was my experience. And that was part of my first step. And I came in here and I got some information, started to have an experience with this information. And I was brought to the edge of a cliff, one might say. And what do I do now? And they gave me step two, which for me has been my solution to this whole thing. It was going to be a place that I was going to get to where a God of my understanding was going to restore me, Peter Marinelli, to sanity, which meant I was going to given a whole new mind by this experience with the Spirit, an awakening of the Spirit. My mind was no longer going to pump me with, let's go drink, regardless of the consequences the day before. And I was going to be brought to that place. And for me, at the beginning, it was G.O.D., Group of Drunks, Good Oily Direction. I would come in here and feel power and safety in these numbers. And that was good enough. My own conception, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient. My book tells me that. My book tells me where, how, and why to find this higher power in Chapter T, Agnostics. And it just set me up to turn this whole thing to this loving and caring God. This great reality deep down within that I was praying to, it was kind of vague and out there, but I would pray. I didn't know that it was there before my heart took its first beat, and it'll be there when it beats its last beat. It's here forever. I just had to get access to it, and I was blocked by calamity, worship of other things, you name it. Somewhere I was separated from this whole, I think it was like when I was about 14, but I'm not sure, but somewhere I got separated. I picked up a drink and all bets were off. My book tells me why and how, that I was supposed to lay aside prejudice, lay aside old ideas, because coming here, some of my conceptions of God weren't very nice ones. Kind of thought he was out there, but when my mom was taken from me when I was 14, there was something that went on that, well, where are you, God? My mom would take me, I'm a Catholic, my mom would take me to church. She taught me how to pray, say my prayers at night, gave me good rules, good information to live. And then she dies at the hands of this thing called alcoholism, and I kick back, and I think somewhere in my mind I says, well, what's this about? I don't know about you, God. And I think I was separated. And my book is telling me just, we beg you. They beg us. All I had to do was lay aside prejudice. And you know what? You know how that happened? Not anything on my own that I said, well, I'm going to come into AA and lay aside prejudice to seek an experience with this power. What happened to me was this. I suffered from alcoholism. I was dying when I got here. And I was willing to go to any lengths. One of the questions my sponsor asked me when we started this was, are you willing to go to lengths to recover? Well, sure I was, based on my experience, if you will, having a first step, getting this. And so I saw my solution was in two, and I showed up to step three. And I'm going to share this, a story that happened to me in my seventh, and God willing, last rehab. I get there by way of dying of alcoholism. And, you know, when we want God enough and the circumstances make us willing, we will seek this power and at all costs. And I was laying in this rehab. It was a Sunday night. And I remember there was a doctor on call that made his rounds. And I'm screaming. My body's screaming in pain. I'm going through all kinds of withdrawals, alcohol and some other things I was taking. And, you know, that not only the physical pain, but what was going on in here was, I did it again. Look what I did to my family. I'm unemployable. I haven't had a job in so long. Look at my life. It just came screaming back to me. And I was in this rehab, and it was killing me. I was in a vice grip, and it was just squeezing with no mercy. And I said, I want to die. When Bill says he wants to jump through his window sash, I can totally identify with that. It was screaming so much. Just to get out of this, let me just jump through the window. I was two floors up. I don't know what I would have done, but I want, you know, it's just, I wanted to go through a window. The pain was horrific. The physical torture I was experiencing was another thing altogether. And I remember pleading to these nurses on duty, please get the doctor here. I need medication. I need something because I'm not getting through this night. I know me and I'm not getting through this night. I'm going to do something really bad to myself. Get a doctor. And they told me the doctor made his rounds and we're going to have to get in touch with him and it may be some time. Why don't you go back to your room and relax? And I was at my wit's end. And I remember laying on this bed and kind of like rolled up into a ball and rocking, and I couldn't stop the tears of, you know, I was missing my family and this physical pain. And in this desperation, I remember getting off the bed and hitting my knees like I begged this God in a hallway to save my life. That same God I remember begging, Father, please help me. That's as simple as I can make my prayers. Just help me. Because it was coming down on me from all angles. And you know exactly what I'm talking about when you've been there. It was coming down on me from all places. And I said, Father, please just help me. What happened to me was I got up into bed and I woke up the next morning. That's all I remember. The next day wasn't a great day, but it was better than that night, that long, long, dark night. What I have found is when I have gone through stuff, see, I didn't know then, well, God worked last night. When I, even currently, when I'm going through stuff and I'm turning to this power, somehow I get through. And it's not until I'm through and on the other side and I look back and I said, you know something? You know that thing, footprints? Where there's one set of footprints and you're saying, God, you left me, and you look back and you realize God had you cradled in his arms the whole time. It's when I get on the other side, I realize that this loving, caring God was walking me through another drama of my life that I thought I can never get through. And that's what happened to me in this rehab, and it's happened to me many times in here. I remember that when I showed up to this third step with my sponsor. There were some considerations I had to make. And trust me, you know, a book says almost none of us like the self-searching, leveling of pride, confession of shortcomings. I almost embraced that because it had to be better than what I left off on. You know, looking for another bottle of blackberry brandy to wash the night away, and if I didn't, I was going to get really ill. So when I was given this information, okay, I'm a willing student, I'll do it. I show up to this third step, and my sponsor had me take a look as we went through page 58 into the next page. Was I convinced that I'm an alcoholic, my life's unmanageable? Well, sure I am. And I'm certainly willing to do anything. You know, God couldn't win if he was sought. Sure. No human power could relieve me of my alcoholism. I didn't know too much about that, but I was certainly willing to do that. I was convinced that my life on self-will can hardly be a success. My sponsor asked me, all I had to do was remember what brought me in here. You know, the wrinkles weren't out of my belly. I was willing to go to any lengths. I remembered what it was like. It was very clear to me. And what my sponsor had me to do is I took a look at the third step prayer, and what he asked me to do was to write out the third step prayer word for word, and underneath it write out my own third step prayer. Interpret this prayer. I never saw this prayer before. What does this prayer actually mean? And I wrote out what this prayer meant to me, and that prayer became my prayer. The third step prayer became my prayer. So when I said it, it was a prayer for me. It wasn't some words in a page. It was stressed to me, and I'll probably stress it a few times tonight to have an experience with this information and not just read it and recite it. And I remember writing out what this prayer meant. Anyway, my sponsor had me hold his hands one day. He said, are you willing to continue with this? And he held my hands, and we did a third step prayer together. There were some things that went on with this that were really, I look back on it now, I was moved by this power to continue to write this fourth step. I took a look where my life run on self-will can hardly be a success, and I was shown how, just by taking a look at my first step experience. Everything I tried to do in my life always never ever worked. And every time I tried to do something, there was a drink behind it or before it. And so when I showed up here, I was willing. I did my third step prayer. My sponsor didn't give me information that was going to kill me, like, you need a really good third step. Or, well, let's hold on to this until you get your life together because there's a lot of stuff going on. Then we'll do our fourth step. He wasn't in the business of killing me. He was in the business of saving my life. And after my third step prayer, there's a book says, next, we launched out in a course of vigorous action, which means right now, not later. Next means now. My book tells me that this decision could have permanent effect if I follow the rest of the directions. This decision is not just for now. It could have a permanent effect. And I was to experience that down the road. Page 63 gives me some wonderful promises that I experienced many times, that if I kept close to this God, he'd give me what I need, if I perform his work well. I was shown that that was a promise if I did it, and a warning if I didn't. What was I doing? I tell newcomers, you want to work the third step, we talk about turning it over, letting go and letting God, all these wonderful slogans that without any information, they're just words for me. You want to work your third step, put pen to paper and start step four. And so that's what I did. And I began my fourth step, and I had some experiences with four. I think it's important I share with you. I was living in this apartment, my first apartment. And what was in it was, one of these futons was my bed. That's all I can afford at the time. People in AA took care of me. They gave me a TV, a black and white TV, because I couldn't afford it. When that broke, someone else showed up with another TV. I remember my doorway had all these AA bumper stickers on the door. You know, they kept me safe. I don't know. I had something that represented my higher power above the door. I had a coffee pot. I had a phone. And my first night in this apartment, there was nothing on the windows. I had no shades. Actually, the first night there was nothing in the place. Yet I was in there sober, part of this fellowship, and I was in paradise. And once I start to get like a little bed a TV and a radio. This was great stuff. And I was in this apartment, and I'm writing my fourth step. And this is what happened to me. I showed up willing to go to any lengths, and I remember starting to write, and I would say this. I should eat before I write, because it's going to be a long night. And so I would eat. And then I would do, well, I should eat, and I got to digest my food, so I should watch a little bit of TV. So I'm eating, watching TV, then I'm going to go write. And maybe I should clean the place up because I'm in AA. I'm supposed to look good and I'm supposed to live good. So let me eat, watch TV, clean the place, and I never wrote. I would put pen to paper, and then I would say, well, my sponsor doesn't need to know this, and that wasn't that important. And this is what happened to me. I started to get sick quick. So already the road was narrowing. What I've experienced in here in 10, 11, and 12, the road has narrowed. And in this discipline, there's a whole lot of freedom. I didn't know it then. I just knew I was getting sick and it was happening quick. And I shared this dilemma with my sponsor. And I'll clean up the language a little bit. But he reminded me about going to any lens and that I had no power to be searching, fearless, and moral. I had power to do a lot of other things, but not to be rigorously honest with this work. I couldn't do it on my own. And so what I had to do is hit my knees and ask my Heavenly Father for the power to be searching, fearless, and moral, to write this work, to get right with Him, to get free. And I wrote a prayer across the top of the page, and you know what? I started to write, and I did my first column. It talks about resentment, fear, and sex inventory, institutions and principles. You know, what an order. I can't go through with it, and God moved me right through it. And I wrote my first column, and it was all these names. I remember starting with my mom and my dad and my kid brothers, and then I was coming across names, and I'm writing names, name after name, and I remember calling my sponsor and saying, I have names on this list that make no sense. You know, some of the names that came across, I said, I got an idea why I'm angry with this person. You know, why I'm fearful with this person. But some names showed up and I had no idea why. And my sponsor gave me great information. He says, do not deny the Spirit. God's in charge of your life, not you. Just continue writing. And so I would continue to write. There were people on my in this first column that I didn't even know their name. I would write a description of the person. They came to me. I'm not supposed to be that arrogant to say, well, I don't know their name, so they're not going on the list. I made a description and put it down. Column two was going to show up and tell me why. Why I was angry with them. And that was in God's time, not my time, as I was writing. And I finished this first column, I got all these names. And I remember the first name on my list was my mom. And the other thing that came to me was, how can I have resentment with my mom? She's not even alive. She suffered at the hands of alcoholism. I felt like this disloyal, ungrateful son. And I got welled up with all this emotion. I went to call my sponsor. And he was telling me that if I prayed and went to this power and followed directions, first off, my fourth step is perfect in spirit. The other thing he told me, that going through this stuff was not supposed to be a cakewalk. Column two was going to disturb me on some things. If your fourth step I have found is a cakewalk, maybe you're not really doing it. I'm not writing this wonderful little autobiography about me, and I'm not listing all the good things I did. You know, you hear that sometimes. Well, make sure you list all your assets. Those things will not get me drunk. God knows the time I helped a little old lady across the street. That ain't getting me drunk unless I start running around telling everybody about the good deeds I did. Then we're in a different place. But it's about listing these things that were blocking me. See, my book says I had to face, for the very first time, face, hold a mirror up to me and not you, and be rid of. That's an order. That's some work. Vision for You talks about patience, willingness, and labor. Labor is work, and that's what some of this required. And it was on God's power that I was able to do this. So I remember speaking with my sponsor, and I wrote out this stuff having to do with my mom, and I wrote about my dad, and I went through my entire life. My fourth step wasn't until I went back to my first drink. My book is really clear. We went back through our lives, and we listed people, institutions, principles, who we were angry at and why. So I went as far back as I can remember, and I cannot believe what came to me, and I hit my second column, and those people that I weren't too sure about, stuff showed up. And it may seem trivial if I share it with you, but it was there nonetheless, and there was a reason why it was there. And I remember I moved into my third column, and it talks about some areas of my life, personal relationships, self-esteem. My current sponsor told me when I'm listing self-esteem, I'm fighting for my life at that point. This is what my self-worth is on the line here. My security, my ambition, my pocketbook, my sex relations, all of this stuff was listed. This was thorough work that God moved me to do by the instructions in this book. Come to this fourth column. Suddenly, you know, rubber hits the road here. I mean, the first three columns required some work, but when I talk about face and be rid of, this is where I'm facing me for the first time, and I'm seeing all the manifestations of self. See, that third step promise I talked about, where it says that God provides us what we need if we kept close to Him and performed His work well, there's a piece in there that says, less and less I became interested in my little plans and designs, and more in what I can contribute to life. The reason why that's happening, because self is starting to die. That's one of the promises. It's about death to self for successful living. And that's what I saw me, self, in the fourth column and all the manifestations of it. My book talks about driven by 100 forms of fear, self-pity, self-seeking, and on and on and on. Self across the board. I read something recently, and I'm going to do an injustice to it, but I try to do the best with this. He talks about how there's I and self. And I is what you see here wrapped around this spirit, this great reality, this God spirit that each one of us have. Self, the best way to put it, is the troublemaker. And where he shows up and how, I don't know, but he does. And self is the one that wants things on his terms, in his time, and none of it's good for me. And that's what I had to be rid of. That was some of the stuff that was going to block me from this power. Because what I found out is that this spirit does... I've used the term that I've got sick spiritually. What I meant with that, by my life was sick. What I have found out is the spirit, if it is God, does not get sick. What happens to me is I become blocked from it, and I get sick. And this is the stuff in column four that was keeping me dead, spiritually dead, and living for the next drink. And I had to be free of that at all costs. I remember going through some of the institutions that I had to write down, and I had major problems with the medical community. They should have saved my mom. I had major problems with the religious community. They should have saved my mom. Institutions. I had things that attached to my fourth step that I could not believe was being put on paper, yet there it was. My ideas did not work. The God idea did. And a lot of this stuff was my ideas. And what I had to do was be separated from this stuff. I went through this work recently. Some current work. And I shared last week how I was attached to an idea of 10, 11, and 12 forever. And I got to be honest with you. I was in a good place. But certain things started to happen to me. Like I was starting to experience some areas of agnosticism in my life. I was starting to rely on me rather than God, because little by slowly I start to put God in a box, which means I'm in self, which means I'm in fear, and I'm running my own life, and I start to manage my own life, and I'm in trouble again. As subtle as it may be, as small as it may be at that moment, I'm running the show, and I'm headed for trouble. And I start to experience some uncomfortability. And I went through this work again. And part of going through this work again was my sponsor had me say this thing called a lay-aside prayer. Now, I shared with him my problems with this prayer. Because there's a group that would tell me, oh, if you're going through the book, you got to do the lay-aside prayer. And I says, where's this prayer in the book? Well, it's a little piece here and a little piece there. I says, well, so it's not in the book then. So it's a made-up prayer. And I had a lot of contempt prior to investigation about this prayer. And I refused to even deal with it. And that's where I was with this prayer. And I spoke to my current sponsor about my dilemma with this. And he, after I gave him this big explanation, you know what he did? He laughed over the phone. And he shared with me where that prayer came from and what it's about. And all I was doing was just laying aside my old ideas, my old attachments. My attachments became my God at one point. Our book talks about being rocketed into a fourth dimension. And he told me how my life was dominated by three: obsessions, compulsions, and emotions. That stuff was taking me into page 52, and he showed me how I'm starting to kind of lean in that direction. What do you want to do? And I had to get free. And he shared with me what this prayer was about. That all I was doing... See, I was under the impression that I was telling God this: what you gave me for the last 14 years is not good enough, so I need something new. And I felt really arrogant and ungrateful about that. So he tells me, so in other words, God's judging you. You know, when you talk to your sponsor, you get prepared to give them all the right answers because you want to be the star pupil. And then he just talks to you and the truth comes out and you catch yourself. And that's what happened to me. And I says, yeah, I'm judging my God. So you just limited God, didn't you, is what he told me. And I realized, and this was a tough pill to swallow, because I'm saying 14 years in AA, I should not be doing this, and I was doing it. I was limiting the power of my God, right in that simple statement. And all I had to do was understand that no matter what I do, my God was going to love me unconditionally. like any parent who loves his child. When a kid makes a mistake, we don't banish him to Devil's Island, for Christ's sake. You know, we teach him and we hold him. My God was going to love me regardless. And all I had to do, I was given a great analogy. I have all these books on a shelf, and I get new books that I want to read. I just push the other books aside to make room for new ones. It was that simple. I was laying aside some old ideas and eventually letting go of some old attachments that I was worshiping for a new experience to continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This was vital. And again, once again, I was going to experience the death of self. Successful living, daily dying. I was given this work, a current fourth step. See, I always thought you go through the work again, I got to start from day one. No, we're going to look currently where you are right now. Right now. And my sponsor shared with me, it's not that your life is in the toilet, but there's certain things going on that we can address. And I was given this area, the 17 different areas I went through. And in those, each of those areas were broken down into other departments, if you will, compartments. And I was listing all of this stuff. Once again, I had to pray to my God for allow me to do this. And I wrote. And as I'm writing, some things I knew, finances weren't in order. I had legit reasons for it, but they still weren't in order. There were some other areas of my life that were just a little uncomfortable with. And what came to me was stuff when I was 5 and 6 years old, when I was 8 and 10 years old, and I got on the phone and I asked them, I said, what's this about? Just keep writing. It's supposed to show up. Just keep writing. And so I wrote, and I got done with this stuff. And just to speed up a little bit, something was given to me. Again, I had contempt prior to investigation, multiple fifth step, multiple sharing. And I said, well, you know, where in the book does it say that? And he gave me some information, and I sat down with Mike, actually. And I was scared to death going to his house. Like the first time I did a fifth step, I was scared to death. I said, now I got to unload this stuff. But I made a prayer, and I was willing to go to Lentz, and I showed up. And we talked a bit, and I revealed some of this stuff. And then I sat down with my sponsor, and it was a little bit easier. Every time I sat with the fifth step and shared this stuff with someone, I was never, ever judged. I was given some of their stuff on how they related to it, and I was always offered a solution, never judged. And I knew that was the power of God. You want to see God in here, watch one drunk helping another. Everyone goes home at 9 o'clock, you see the two drunks in the quarter at 10:30, you know, still talking, still walking through this together. You know, reaching down into the hole and pulling another one out. That's how God works, and I experienced that in this fifth step. I shared with my sponsor all this work, and he gave me some really wonderful information, as Mike did. And I found myself getting free and taking a look at some areas that I wasn't too thrilled to look at, but I was looking at it nonetheless, and it was really by God's grace that I was able to do this, and I started to get free of some things. I shared this last week. I was up at a meeting in Harlem, and we were talking about this work. And I sat there, and I realized I was willing to share all of this stuff except if it would harm someone else or be in poor taste with everyone in that room. That was a long way from where I was before I started doing this. The first time I got done with this fourth step, I remember I had all this information on, I had about 5 spiral notebooks worth of a fourth step. And I had an appointment to see my sponsor. What had happened to me while I was writing was there's certain things that were taking place. A book says that we're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle, that we're going to have peace and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies. This is in step 4. I didn't even share this stuff yet. I found my attitude towards people a little bit different. There's some promises on page 25, the great fact. Deep and effective spiritual experience would revolutionize my whole attitude towards life, towards fellows, and towards God's universe. Step 4 kind of hints at that, and I was starting to experience some of that stuff, and I didn't even sit down and do my first fifth step yet. But there was something going on. I was working on the Brooklyn waterfront, which is not the training ground for spiritual growth for a guy like me, but there I was, and you know, you kind of get pushed to the edge sometimes, and I found certain things taking place, and I'm still writing. It says it held the key to the future. These are very powerful words my book talks about. The key to my future is in this work that I'm doing. When it talks about to look at stuff from an entirely different angle, here was my life. And it was as if I'm walking down a crowded street in Midtown Manhattan, trying to get to my destination. And then I go up to a building and look down from the 10th floor. And I see things from a completely different angle, where the path is clear, where it's not so crowded, where it is crowded. I look things completely different. And that's how I was moved through this work. I saw my life from a completely different angle for the first time in my life. I'm still writing. I'm not done yet. What I shared earlier was, sometimes you don't realize that God's working in our life until we get to the other side and we say, look at this. I mean, my fourth step to complete that alone was this War and Peace novel, and I still wonder how I did it. I had to go sit down with my sponsor, my first time I sat with this fifth step. And I remember getting these thoughts. When I first started with this guy, in my mind, he invented Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, he walked on water. When God first hooked us up, this guy, I hear an expression AA when we say people are on fire. This guy was untouchable. He was just in just an incredible place. And God put him in my life. And I remember thinking, when I had to go see him for my sit down at my fifth step, some old ideas start coming back. I was taught as a kid, the only thing you trust is the money in your pocket. That is it. And that thought was coming back because it was coupled with, who is this guy I'm going to share my life with? I have a sex inventory on here that's going to my grave. I ain't sharing it with another man. Impossible task. It's not happening. And I start to get that feeling in my gut like an uneasiness. And I was gripped by fear. What am I going to do? And I remember hitting my knees, moved to hit my knees and making a prayer. Father, just get me to this guy's house. You're in charge of my life. And somehow I showed up at his house. I'm knocking on his door. And I remember sitting down and I began this work. Not once was I judged by this man. And I had some things on there that would have been very easy to be judged with. There were things on my fourth step writing that I was not very proud of. There was hate that I wrote about with my family who I adore today that I thought I would never share with someone, and yet the Spirit moved me to unload on this guy, and he just shared with me some of his personal experiences, some of the solutions he found to it. He would give me some prayers out of my big book, My Anger Prayer, for example. He pointed to this information that this book was going to save me because it was going to take me to a God of my understanding. Not once did this man judge me, and I'm forever grateful to him for that. If I live to be 100, I'll be grateful every year of my life for this man for doing this, because the way I was brought up was, you don't tell anyone anything, you trust the money in your pocket, and judge everyone. If they're not doing something according to my plans, they're the ones who are wrong, not me. That's how I grew up, right or wrong. And I sat in this guy's living room the first time and I unloaded this stuff, and he embraced everything I had to say. There were a few times he looked really bored too. I thought he was sleeping on me. Little by slowly, I was walking through this. I went through resentment inventory, I went through fear inventory. I saw how fear dominated my life. It owned me. Our book talks about driven by 100 forms. It drove me around. It showed up and took me around. My decisions, fear-based, were wrong. My actions, fear-based, were wrong. They talk about how this sixth spirit, I forget the exact words, but how it's fatal, not only to me, but when I'm in that place, it's fatal to others. My alcoholism directly affects others. I saw all of this on paper. And I shared with this man. Now, it was really interesting. Some of my work in my fourth step, you know, it would be like I stole $100 in big capital letters that you can see from across the street. Sex inventory was this little scribbly writing. I had a squint embarrassment with this stuff. And I remember him stopping me, and we made some prayer, and he gave me some more assignments to write. And you know something? God, in his loving way, moved me to share a sex inventory. And the rest of it was really easy. He had asked me when I got done, was anything else that I needed to tell him that I didn't tell him. I was free of this stuff. I shared this guy. Our book says we must be entirely honest with someone if we expect to live long and happily. This guy was the first human being on this earth that knew me, top to bottom. Now, I've heard people share many times about they have this great experience soon as they're done with their fifth step. That is not what happened to me. Those fifth step promises didn't happen to me until I was really beginning my sixth step. I got done with my fifth step, and it talks about one. The only time in my book it tells me to like give me a time frame that's 1 hour is after my fifth step. My book uses words like next, launched, vigorous. It doesn't say hang out for a little while. Let's see what happens. I mean, I've heard information in Alcoholics Anonymous where they say you're going too fast, you're going to get drunk. God forbid. I wish, how about this one? I wish you a slow recovery. How dare I wish another alcoholic a slow recovery and play God and kill him with that statement? Shouldn't God be the one who's going to judge whether I'm recovering slowly or quickly? Whether I have a spiritual experience like Bill did or spiritual awakening, the educational variety? Isn't God in charge of that? How dare I tell someone walking here dying, I wish you a slow recovery and do a step a year? Imagine if Bill, I heard Joe Hawk say this, imagine if Bill would have done a step a year. I don't think we would be in here tonight. But that's some of the stuff that goes on. I'm grateful, again, that this guy wasn't given that information and didn't pass that bad information on to me. A book talks about being quiet for an hour, and this is what I did. I took the hour and took about 2 weeks and then took about a month, and I was into 2 months, and I was getting sick. I was getting sick again, and sickness was showing up like this. I'll go to a meeting tomorrow. It's getting late. I know who's speaking tonight. I heard them already. My sponsor would give me days and times that I had to call him. I can call him anytime, but he was disciplining me with certain days I had to call him. And I would say, well, maybe I don't have to call him today. I'll call him later when I'm ready. And the phone got to be 300 pounds again. And I was walking right back into alcoholism. I was walking right back into it suddenly. And this is what was going on. And when I got enough pain, I remember sharing with my sponsor this dilemma. And again, I'll clean up the language. And it reminded me about going to any lengths. And what I had to do is go back and go through the first five proposals once again. Not go through them, but read through the first five proposals once again. See if I left anything out. And on that spirit of willingness, I moved into my sixth step. And that's for next week. But some of those promises they talk about, where we had spiritual beliefs and now begin to have a spiritual experience. It may be the infancy of it, but I start to experience that stuff as I move through the rest of this work. The fear is falling from us as I start to go through this work. It didn't happen to me when I got done with five. It happened to me later on. And that showed up. I was watching a ball game one time in this apartment all alone. And it dawned on me, I'm all alone watching a ball game. And I'm not climbing the walls. And I'm really okay with me. There was nothing barking at me. That the judge went away. The voices went away. I was in the moment. This was a great freedom. I never experienced this before. This was good stuff. The last time I went through this work, I had a really interesting experience, which I'm supposed to talk about next week, so I'll hold up. But I had some incredible experiences with my current sponsor moving me through the six and seven work and into amends. Some really terrific experiences. Once again, my big book didn't lie to me. I will share a little bit about being on the other side of a fifth step. See, I was treated with love and dignity every time I shared a fifth step, and that's what I had to do when someone showed up at my door. I've heard many of them, and I see me and everyone who shows up at my door with a fifth step because I know what they're uncomfortable about before they even start. You know, the stuff with the family and the sex inventory. Those seem to be the two areas where everyone rather not talk about. You know, and I know where they're at. And we make a prayer, read some stuff out of our book, take a moment of meditation, and we begin. I've had wonderful experiences hearing Fifth Step. I remember how I was treated through mine. See, when I got here, and still till right now, I'm giving nothing less but dignity and respect every time I walk in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm treated with love and care by everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous. that happened to me when I went through this work with a sponsor. So I would sit down, and I've heard a whole bunch of them. And what I try to offer is whatever God moves me to do and some of the valuable lessons I learned by hearing my sponsors work with me. I'm not so attached to any longer that you have to share it with one person and one person only. That has been something new for me. I don't run around telling people, well, you got to share with multiple, you know, a whole bunch of people. I don't do that either. But if the Spirit moves you, I'm in a place that if the Spirit moves you to do something, then listen to the Spirit, because it's always right. And that's what happened to me this last time. I had that contempt prior investigation. One person only, and go to the grave with that one. And here I was, I shared it with two people, and I'm willing to do it again. This was a great freedom. The rock on my back got removed. So I'm very grateful what has happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about to get to this truth, to get free. The experience I've had is when you're first coming around, we're reaching out there to fill up. And what we really need to do is completely empty out to awaken. It's constantly emptying out. I seek nothing, and yet I'm given so much more. I'm full by emptying out over and over and over again. My inventories reveal that to me. It's about cutting loose of a lot of stuff and asking God what I can do. Page 68, I was given an assignment to do one time. It was actually suggested. It wasn't an assignment. Mike gave me a suggestion one time about sitting in meditation and write what comes to you in meditation. And so I did it. And right before I did that, I read page 68 for some reason. Page 68 has become my personal prayer, because page 68 is a prayer. And I did this exercise, and I wrote down all the stuff that came to me. There were some things that I had to discard and some things that were God-guided. And I was moved to go back to my big book and read page 68. And if you take a look at page 68, they talk about matching calamity with serenity. They talk about strength and courage, that God will demonstrate through me, what he can do. This is a great, great piece of information. How much power is God going to give me? He's going to demonstrate through me. I was a drunk who lived on the Bowery, for Christ's sake, and I come in here and I'm starting to awaken, and God's going to give me some power to go do his work. My third step talks about he's a principal and I'm the agent. He's going to empower me to represent him. What great information. And as long as I'm clear, I can hear. As long as I'm cleaning house, I can do great, great deeds, God's deeds, in here. And I read page 68, and I remember picked up my pen and I start writing all the stuff on page 68, and I made this prayer, which I keep. It's very, very personal to me, because it came out of a place of sincerity. One drunk offering another drunk good information. And then God gets in there and takes over. I feel blessed and privileged to be part of the sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous and to be a recovered member of this fellowship. So thank you for listening.